Okay. Don't want to have to repeat it.
In fact, Inspector.
I think that's right. And the first thing, one of the earliest things, going back a little bit, in my sort of recollections, which is when I was about 5 or 6, and we were staying in Cambridge for a year, and we always used to go to lunch there on Sunday, parents, my sister and I. And you see, Harris Rackham was the brother of Arthur Rackham.
Oh, was he? I didn't know.
And so they had all the... and Harris Rackham at that time was tutor of Christ's. And he lived in the tutor's house, which is at the corner of Hobson Street and looks over into Christ's and the special door, you know, which rather fascinated for the tutor to go back and forwards. And then, of course, they had all the presentation copies of Harris Rackham's pictures, which I used to look at on the window seat.
Harris Rackham was also an artist, was he, as well as
Arthur? Sorry, it was Arthur Rackham's
pictures, yes.
Which had been given to Harris Rackham.
Yes, I see. Yeah.
No, he wasn't. And they had quite a few of Arthur Rackham's pictures in the house. I remember after the war, we all went for holiday to Cornwall, and Aunt Dorothea and Uncle Harris arrived on bicycles. And Aunt Dorothea had knickerbockers, which in those days was quite something. I was then about 10 or 11, and you know, this was quite impressive. And we had a very good holiday in Cornwall because Aunt Dorothea...
Just interrupt, they hadn't ridden from Cambridge, had they?
No, I can't remember where they'd ridden from,
yes,
I'm afraid. They'd probably been staying with somebody else.
Yes, that's it.
Mm. I think they were living in Cambridge then. They bicycled enormous distances in those days, and they probably stayed... I mean, they used to bicycle from Essex to Cambridge, often backwards and forwards, you know.
So she rather struck you as a child of somebody sort of rather... daring, really?
Well, it was, you know, it was the sort of thing that you did remember. And then I also remember we had all these picnics on the sand. It was very hot. And she used to read Middlemarch aloud. She was a great reader aloud always. And this went on right up till she died, because she went rather deaf, but she could still read. And one of the things she did do, really, till she was actually ill, was to read to the blind.
Sure.
Middlemarch was a bit bored me, actually.
It's a marvellous novel, but really for
but
adults.
A little, yeah. A little, but the family all enjoyed it, and there she was reading away.
Did she like George Eliot, actually? I mean, was it just a coincidence that she was reading?
I think she did, yes. I think she liked all that kind of, and Jane Austen, and she was very fond of literature indeed.
Yeah.
And they had an enormous number of books at... because they afterwards moved from Hobson Street to Parker's Peace and had one of those houses with a basement, a ground floor. And I remember that the great thing was that the basement kitchen must be closed because you couldn't have a domestic going up and down the basement stairs. So, and this was quite early for that kind of... so that what was originally the dining room was turned into the kitchen. And the sitting room was put upstairs. Mm. And she went on living there, right on through the Second War.
After her husband's death?
Yes. Mm. He died before the Second War.
I've got the details of that.
But she went on in that house, which was a very pleasant house. She had a very devoted housekeeper. And went on till she felt it was too big for her, and then moved out well after the war. But the time when we were at Cambridge, when I was at Newnham, and we always used to go to lunch row on Sundays, and of course she did have a great many interesting people. I can remember Susan Lawrence was a very great friend of hers, and there was the occasion when Susan lost her seat. Aunt Dorothea had stood and hadn't got it. And I rather think it was somebody else, but they were all very depressed. And Susan said there's something about Anno Domini. She had had it, you know, she'd never get it again now. And Hugh Dalton also was a friend, and those are the sort of people who came, you know.
She moved in sort of intellectual leftish circles, did she? But not sort of far left, presumably, but sort of responsible left circles.
One didn't seem to talk so much about left and right in those days, I don't think. What I think was rather wonderful was that she was obviously an intellectual on a middle class background and all those things, but she certainly got on extremely well with the real working class of Cambridge. I think they went to her tremendously with their housing problems and their all their other kinds of things as a councillor, you know.
What do you think they liked about her? I mean, was she very easygoing in her manner of speaking?
No, I think because she took such an interest and because she was extremely clear-headed and she never let anything drop, I don't think. I think it was the... and she was tremendously faithful. I mean, she went on canvassing on the doorstep, you know, into her 80s, I should think, and doing all, you know, the donkey work. But one does in the Labour Party if one does it. And one of them, she went on the CND marches. And certainly the last one, I went on one too when I was with a friend and we didn't walk the whole way, we walked from Aldermaston to Reading or something like that. And she'd come over in Cambridge, she had come by car and she didn't walk at all, but she insisted on getting out for the last mile into Reading. And we were rather concerned because we had to come off here to lecture where I was then, and she was going back to Cambridge, and I think the rest of the party were finishing up in the pub, which and she was rather left, and I was, but she, you know, she was hardly enjoying it. And I think she was very well liked by the sort of younger sort of Labour stalwarts, just because she was so
sort of gay.
So devoted to it. Actually, yes. A great sense of humour, yes. As I say, she wasn't a critical in a way. I mean, although she had a very good brain and so on, I mean, some of one's aunts were critical, but of course she was rather a special aunt because my mother was a great Newnham friend of hers. In fact, I can remember mother saying that for the first evening Aunt Dorothy, I came into her room, and they was a regular set of them, but she was one of them. And that was how my mother met my father.
I see.
She was always a sort of, in a sense, of
I see.
A double aunt, you know, in a way.
You said she was Marga's aunt or something like that in your letter to me. How was she at Marga's aunt? I mean, to you as a child, I mean, was she sort of very... Would she join in things with you?
Yes, I think perhaps it was a bit when one was a little older, actually. They used to come for Christmas very often to us, and then there was the rest of the family at Fens, where she grew up, which was where Richard Gordon to my uncle, the elder son. And so it was a great gathering of relations. And I remember it was one of those general knowledge papers that came out Christmas, you know, and everybody did it.
Oh, no.
I always thought how wonderful all the other generation were. They all seemed to know the most extraordinary things. I wondered whether I'd ever be. But, you know, they did have a vast, I don't think anybody does now.
Yes, a sort of a tremendous literary.
Tremendous literary and historical too, you know. And yes, tremendous quotations, that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, she knew a lot of. No, I think it was more at the stage when I was trying to know what to do. And, well, she took an interest in you. I certainly knew her much more. Knew her best, of course, really, in her old age, perhaps, when I was trying to help her. But I think it was what, as I say, when I was at college, trying going through the stage and not knowing what to do next, you know.
Yes, yeah, so she took an interest in you as a woman, did she?
Yes.
Having a career, I mean, that would fit in, of course,
that's
wouldn't
right.
It? You felt that, did you, rather, that she, in a sense, her political activity in the women's movement probably relates to the fact she was interested in your career as well?
Yes, she was very keen on women taking their part. I mean, she was wanted women teachers to become head teachers and so on. I mean, she was always on for, you know, women getting a fair. And I think this was, you said, why did people like her? I think it was this, that she listened to them. And I always remember they had a rather nice memorial service. She wasn't a friend. She wasn't a, you should say she was a humanist. But they had a memorial meeting at the Cambridge Meeting House, and it was the first one I'd ever been to. But there were so many different people there. I mean, it was the Rupert Davis, I forget he was MP then, or he had been MP. I don't know what was any university actually, but then there was a woman teacher who described how when she, Aunt Dorothea was chairman of the county council, and that if ever she had some sort of problem, Aunt Dorothea would go out and they'd talk it over, and she'd listen very carefully, and then she'd give her opinion at the end of it. And then there was a woman who'd become a councillor quite in her, and she'd gone out and talked it all over, and Aunt Dorothea said, don't only go on committees for women, go on something like the highway.
I mean, was she a very practical woman, would you say? I mean,
she wasn't very domestic.
No, I wouldn't expect that.
Because they grew up with plenty of servants. Well,
yes.
I mean, you know, in this sort of middle class.
Yes, of course, yes.
But she was very practical as far as, you know, practical. I mean, I mentioned about the old people in the workhouse. I mean, she was extremely practical about what really mattered to old people in a home.
Yes, I'm just wondering, you see, if you're trying to explain why working people sort of got on with her work, she would just sort of concentrate with them on a practical problem.
On their own particular problem,
yes,
at that moment,
and get
yes.
something done.
That's right,
yes.
That's it, absolutely.
Yes.
And she wouldn't forget about it all.
So that's most interesting, because you see, I ask you about CND, because there is a direct connection with the women's movement, from the women's movement onwards into the CND movement. Why? How closely connected with CND was she, actually?
Well, she was always keen on the peace movement. I mean, she was a great League of Nations Union person in that era. I just know that she was part of it in Cambridge. I think, on the whole, her activities centred in Cambridge. I mean, she was on certain royal commissions, always the one about unemployment and also one on factories, I think. But in general, her activities did centre in Cambridge, and she was, I said she was at this Friends Memorial meeting, probably was held for her, and I think it was probably on the peace side that she had sort of come, you know, in contact with the Quakers.
Well, she wasn't a religious person, really, then, you
No,
think?
She was definitely not religious. I don't know at what stage she broke away from it, but I think fairly early. And I think she belonged to the humanist society. I think when she was getting old, perhaps, you know, people... She certainly remained humanist all the time. She certainly wasn't a Christian. But she got on through her sort of... She was very socialist. I mean, very indignant about the, you know, the injustices and etc. She was very keen on education. I would say that probably that was... She was chairman of a county council at the time of Henry Morris, when he was director, and she was very keen on the village colleges, and he and she got on extremely well. I mean, it's a bit, he's not alive now to, and because this in a sense combined the two. I mean, you were talking about the culture and the education and that and the socialism and the education, of course. And I mean, I think between them, and Cambridge was terribly backward, and I always felt it was rather amazing that this sort of very progressive experiment, you know, took root in Cambridgeshire.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I know the school in Linton, which was established, because my uncle lives in Horsham, and so I've often gone past what was her attitude to the university then, Stable? And was she critical of the university, really, do you think? I mean,
well, she was critical, they didn't admit women sooner than they did. She was always took an active part in Newnham. She was always on the council, whatever it was. Miss Strachey was one of her great friends. And she, I mean, until she sort of retired because of age, she was certainly went to Khmer always and that sort of thing. And of course, I mean, while her Uncle Harris was alive, she was obviously more part of the university than...
Yes, was she a sort of good Don's wife, so to speak? I mean, in a sense, did she take an interest in undergraduates and do the entertaining stuff and all that?
Yes, they never went, I remember. You know, they came to tea and didn't know anything.
Oh, well, yeah, I
probably too. Thank you. No doubt, heard from many people.
And did she sort of have a following among her husband's pupils at all, do you think? I mean, did they take to her? Did she like undergraduates?
I think so, but quite honestly, I don't really know a lot about that.
Mm. You didn't see that side of her?
No, I know that they, I think for, at the weekend, they did tend to have people, you know, friends. Because she had an enormous number of friends from the, well, she'd done so many things, and I think perhaps they tended, because I always remember these large parties. And Uncle Harris was a bit of a conversationalist.
Was he?
And he, you know, told very good stories.
Did he?
In a sort of Cambridge tradition, rather.
Your uncle, what sort of Don was he? I'm afraid I ought to know, but I don't
classical.
Know. Oh, classics.
She did classics. She only got a third, and very amused, really, reading her sort of recollections of it, because what she was really keen on was hockey. She was captain of a hockey, and she obviously put all her energies into organising, you know, getting people working together and the enthusiasm. But she was a liberal leader in political, and Susan Lawrence was on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And she took a great interest in that, too. I mean, in those days, Newnham, of course, was a world in its own.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, because I always used to hear this from my mother too, they had endless societies. Browning Society, Shakespeare Society, you know.
Yes, and that's where they get all that culture from, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose it it was. And
But she started off as a Liberal then and became Labour, did she, do you think?
Oh, yes, I mean, there wasn't a Labour Party, was there?
No.
Those days.
Yeah.
I think she... I always imagined she became Labour pretty early on.
Mm. She's a progressive person, and so
yes.
It really goes that way.
Well, I mean, it was sort of justice for the underdog.
Yes. Does it surprise you that she was a very good committee woman? I mean, would you have thought that?
Oh, no, I would think she was, definitely, because she was very clear-headed, I think. This is, after all, isn't that the secret of it, really?
Oh, yes. Well, sort of sorting out, you know, whether the amendments come before the substantive motions and all that stuff.
Yes. And, of course, she did a tremendous amount of it.
Mm. Though she was very experienced.
She did a lot of speaking, too. I mean, she was very, I said about the WA and the history of... Of course, she had a very wide range of things on which she spoke. She used to take people round Cambridge too. She was very keen on, they used to have what they call a working women's summer school, which went on for years. They used to stay in Newnham and WEA. She did a lot in the WEA. Hampton Jackson was another friend of hers, of course, younger than her. I think some of the Cambridge WEA people would still remember her, because she really kept up her connection with that.
Did you ever hear her give speeches? I suppose you must have done.
Yes, not
or lectures.
Not very often, actually, but I have heard. But she had a very good voice, and she was very clear in the way she, you know. I wouldn't say she was exactly a an orator. I mean, she wasn't sort of terribly...
No, business-like speaking.
Yes, very. And she had her bits of, humour, which came in.
Yes, you say she had a sense of humour. What sort of sense of humour was it? Was it a sense of ridiculous, or... How would you describe it? Could she imitate people? What sort of...
Difficult.
It's difficult, isn't it? trying to sort of analyse the unanalysable.
Yes, I think you are, really. I'm afraid I'm not very good
at it. Very often you get sort of rather earnest type of reformer who really is rather tiresome because he can't give a lift to his address.
Well, that's what I meant, really, but she did know when to introduce the humorous story, I think.
Mm.
I mean, some people possibly did think she was earnest, I don't know. But I think, really, it was the interest in the individual person she was talking to, which was probably... And that she had so many interests. She didn't have one thing which, I mean, someone can be a bit boring if they're completely taken up with one thing, but there were so many.
Was she a good conversationalist? I mean, when you went to these lunches, for instance, do you remember Marvel's talks and sort of discussions and things?
Well, certainly Uncle Harry's hogged it a bit. Because I always remember, it was rather sad, he had a riding accident and lost his memory. And then, you see, he told the same story, and particularly when you're young, that's extremely frustrating, isn't it? But, you know, it's always rather sad when it was a good story. And I think she found it a bit frustrating, too. So I think she was... Because you say you've got the... date he died, but I mean it was quite a long time when he was all right except for this memory lapse, which did always does make people rather difficult to live with in a way.
Yes, of course, because they get annoyed with themselves, sort of thing.
Well, I think it was particularly this, as I say, is him, you know, telling you the same thing, whereas he had been very amusing in his...
That's rather awful, isn't it?
Well, I think it is.
I mean, can you describe their relationship with each other? He was presumably in sympathy with her views, was he?
Yes.
Was he? I mean, they didn't argue about that.
No, he was definitely left, and it's difficult to know. I used to think, I know, later when he seemed so much older than she was, or because he'd had this accident, that although in some ways one might have thought an impatient person, she was extremely patient about it, and one never sensed any feeling that she was finding it very trying, but I think she must have done. I think she was understanding in the sense that she did get on well with the uneducated and perhaps rather slow.
Mm.
She didn't appear to
hurry them along.
No.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, you might get a different... As I say, some people said that they found her alarming. That, I think, was more in her, perhaps, later days, you know.
Mm. But she never had a job, did she? I mean, I suppose it just wasn't done for a woman in that sort of position to have a job in those days.
Well, she married, you see.
Yes.
I think she would have other, because her friends, several of them, were headmistresses. I mean, there was one used to meet these. They used to come down for Khmer at Newnham, and there was two headmistresses. Well, there were two who were on this holiday in Cornwall. So I think if she hadn't married, she would certainly have had a job. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think she married, I don't know the date, but quite young.
She did. She married within about 3 years from taking her degree, I think, according to the date.
I think she was expected to go home after Newnham, which was a bit frustrating, because there was an older sister who didn't marry, and she'd sort of gone away to be head of a hospital, Liverpool University or something. So I think Andorfia was expected, they did expect to have a daughter at home in those days. And I think she did rather piffling things. Mother always used to say she was to keep rabbits. But she also did the GFS and, you know, sort of things like that. But of course, transport, I mean, used to bicycle about, but transport was difficult in those days. And I think she felt very frustrated after the sort of exciting times at Newnham.
Interesting, yes.
And then she married, and of course Cambridge was a wonderful place
to be in.
Mm.
Her home was in Braintree, was it then?
Her home was in Bocking, which is near Braintree.
Yes.
Well, they brought up in London till they were about 10. And then I think the grandfather died, and so my grandfather moved down to Defence, and that was the family home right on.
Mm.
She was fond of the country and that sort of, very fond of animals too. She was devoted to a cat, and she was she's written a little thing about her very early recollections, and she was agonised by the horses falling down on the slippery roads in London and this sort of thing. And I think she was always very fond of animals. But being Cambridge, you couldn't, as you say, she always had this precious cat, which in a way was a bit out of keeping, you know.
Yes, because she wasn't the sort of type of woman who had pets at home. I mean, she was too active, I imagine.
You asked what was said about the Second World War. She was in Cambridge, and she had students. She had, London School of Economics and Bedford College were both in Cambridge. Because I ran into one of the students who'd been there when I was working in London. And I think she enjoyed that. I mean, I think they enjoyed.
Because presumably a lot of these people would remember her if anyone could find them. But
yes, yes, I think
they're part of the group, you say, who could build up a biography of her in a way.
Yes, yes.
Mm. Mm. What about your own university career? I mean, you were at Newnham, so presumably she must have been very interested in what you were doing, didn't she? And your tutors and your reading and that sort of thing. Did you discuss?
I don't think she was very interested in the I did mathematics, which was a rather stupid subject to do. If I'd been doing economics, she'd probably be more interested. Mm. But she was certainly very interested in what we did afterwards.
Mm.
And this is what I really remember, because I couldn't decide what to do on this. I remember sort of discussions about that.
Mm.
And of course she did know a lot of people. She knew someone in the civil service. And she was a magistrate at a very early time, and one of the Howard League early sort of founders of the secretary was Craven, was a great friend. So she was very keen on all that.
Mm. So she could actually help practically, as well as give you wise advice. She could actually put you in touch with people.
Yes, I remember putting me in touch with somebody who was at the Home Office.
Mm.
That,
and you say she was a factory inspector in the First War?
Yes.
I see, yes. Yes. What about health?
Oh, she was never ill at all. Hated being ill when she was. I mean, it was rather sad. I think, you know, this is a time, as I say, when I really... She went deaf. And so she decided, she was extremely rational about this sort of thing. She went off all her committees. You can't have anyone who's deaf on a committee, that's that. She gave up the house in Parker's Peace because she said, when the students went back, I can't. I think she went on with students for a bit, but that after the war that became a bit. So she decided she must give up that. She went into most uncomfortable lodgings. I mean, she sold up. They did have some very nice things, and these were all sold and distributed without any kind of weeping and gnashing of teeth, you know. And she hadn't anywhere to go for some time, and she'd helped to found a house, old flatlets for old people, a sort of voluntary Association, and she went in there for a bit, but then she decided she really had too much money for that, she shouldn't be living there. So she went to a Red Cross place called Meadowcroft, which didn't suit her very well, because she was very sociable, and this was the sort of place where you rather lived in your own room. And I think they were, she said, they're so dull, I never go out. And she, I think by that time she'd given up bicycling. She bicycled. She never drove a car, but you know what Cambridge is. She went on bicycling. She fell off once, and she was taken to Addenbrookes and then discharged the same day and so on. And then she did give up the bicycle and used to walk and bus and everything to all her various meetings. And so then she went on with what she could do, which was reading to a blind, and she's go all over the various places. And there's one who you could get in touch with if you want the very last time. It was a blind student, a young man who was reading from a bar and taking a legal degree, and she said it was very dull. She used to read these legal things, but anyway, he got through, and he was became a great friend. And he's now a barrister and lecturer, and, you know, which is rather wonderful. Because the other people she read to tended to be other old people who'd gone blind, you know.
There's a blind law tutor in Keble in Oxford, actually, called Harris, actually. Maybe he would know another,
yes.
Another blind.
Well, I think I have still got Tom Cruise, because he's still in Cambridge. He goes up to London. I mean, you know, I never understand these blind people. He goes off on his...
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
Quite incredible. But that was... Of course, she became frustrated because she got older and had to give up all these various things, but she...
But she chose to give them
she
up.
She chose to give them up, and she always did what she could. You know what I mean? If it was quite a small and, in a sense, unimportant thing, she went on doing it. And she went on going to these, I mean, she went on going as a student to WA meetings still.
She was always learning, wasn't she? She was always taking
learning,
things in.
She was always, I mean, sometimes she went to sleep. I mean, this was part of the sort of family jokes that she didn't even wake up. Because that is the sort of thing, you know.
But this... This hockey business, I mean, how does that fit in? I mean, was she always keen on sports and exercise, really? I mean, was she aggressively fit? Do you remember her?
She wasn't ill, no, she was always well.
Mm.
And that's why she, you know, took rather badly to being ill.
Yes.
In Meadowcroft, this is one of the sad things about... You couldn't stay if you got ill, and she had to go to a nursing home, and she simply loathed that. And then she was afraid that this would happen again. This was the sort of time when I was seeing quite a lot of her. I remember she saying she suddenly decided, oh, what is the point of hockey, and she gave it up. And then another thing they used to do a lot was going out in Switzerland, and... Because we had a bit of an argument, I think, about this. I mean, wasn't it worth going to Switzerland even if you couldn't climb? No, she didn't think it was. So, you know, but they did. I mean, she travelled a lot, of course. It was the sort of days when people from university did, I think, sort of walking tours.
Reading parties?
Oh, yes, they certainly had reading parties. Because,
yes.
I mean, I used to hear about this from my mother. There was one famous occasion when they were on one of the rivers, they were boating, and they were so disreputable, they turned up at some pub who wouldn't look at them because you rather enjoyed that story. But she certainly, you know, she did like to be doing something.
Mm.
And this again was why she found old age, I think. But she read enormously. She used to go to university library and have endless books of all sorts and kinds.
You say literature largely, was it all?
No, I would say then it was biographies and political and that sort of thing.
Mm.
I don't know if she read modern novels, I doubt it rather. I mean, she liked the...
So classic novels, then?
Yes, but I don't say she went on reading them then. I think it was more... But she could be skating about all these people who had recollections. idea. But I remember her being awfully scathing about somebody because her blouse was dirty or something, or wasn't right. I mean, I think she had ideas, but no, she wasn't interested really.
But she didn't look a sight. I mean, she just sort of
kept
herself neat, sort of thing, without making a fuss of dress, really.
Yes, she certainly wasn't going to spend much time on it, or very much money, I don't think. But I don't think she didn't stand out as anything particular.
She sort of wore practical clothes, did she, which really weren't noticeable particularly.
Well, I don't ever remember sort of.
I
think when she was giving a talk, she would take a certain amount of hats. Well, hats always. I mean, it was a time when people did wear hats, and the hats were Then I usually, whatever one sees, you know, one thinks what ghastly things they wore in those days.
But what about sort of spending on herself, and sort of was she sort of almost ascetic about her spending money on herself? I mean. Diet, clothes,
I wouldn't say that. I mean, it was a nice home at Parker's Peace, and they were nice meals, you know. A bit of wine and that sort of thing, you know. She wasn't.
She sounds eminently rational and balanced.
Well, she was very, she never had any children.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why she, you know, she. I mean, I never knew whether it was because whether she couldn't have them, or whether I should think probably she couldn't. I mean, in those days people didn't sort of do things as they do now, and I don't think people adopted as they might have done now. But I think she was sorry she hadn't. On the other hand, she was so taken up with. She also took a great. Uncle Harris had nieces, and she. They were, you know, she took as much, and this is, as you see here about them too, the Rackham nieces.
So it didn't sort of, in any way, sort of blight her life or something, not having children?
No,
she wasn't the sort of person who'd respond like that to a setback anyway, I imagine. She'd be busy getting things.
She went to Fagin, I went to a Fagin weekend before when she was quite old.
Did you really? She seems to have kept active, sort of intellectually, right the way up to the end. Did she read newspapers, sort of eagerly?
Oh, yes. I always remember in Park Terrace was one table which was completely taken up with, you know, reports, periodicals, Fabian Quarterly, all the various things in which she was. She was very systematic, because I remember her telling me to, which in French advice I didn't take, about sort of, you know, keeping one's records and...
So that's really why you've got these two cases, that she deliberately kept them, sort of...
Yes, but I mean, I expect she threw away a lot when they weren't needed, but I mean, she was extremely methodical about keeping her notes on and you know, cuttings and all these things, which one does give a lot of... Of course.
Yes, because it's all part of her equipment.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. Well, was she a vegetarian, actually? I mean, sometimes that goes with pacifist sort of, really.
No.
So she didn't have any sort of dietary
fads or anything? No, no, I mean, she wasn't going to waste time having dietary fads.
No. She does sound, I mean, she sounds like so many of them, like Mary Stocks, in fact. Mary Stocks, tremendously sensible.
Yes, I think that I think there were several of them. I would say that.
Yes.
You know, she. I don't know. Do you want any left or not?
Well, no. I must say, I feel a slight regret that that type of woman doesn't seem to exist
now. No.
What about recollections of the suffrage woman? Did she ever talk about it? What did you take a pride in having been a suffragist or being in the NU?
Yes, I think she felt a little bit that all the credit had gone to the Pankhursts and so on, and that you know they others have worked awfully hard. But no one's always so sorry afterwards if one doesn't get the information from. I think she was too much, she didn't talk, recollect at all. I was talking about what was happening at the moment.
Yeah, I understand that, yes.
And what
that
was
would,
going to happen and
that
all that sort
all,
of thing.
All the way along, wouldn't it?
And of course, in a way, then, you know, it's such a pity that people don't write their old. But she went on too long being active about other things and not thinking about.
Did you ever try ask her to write down her recollections? I mean, did she sort of say impatiently, oh no, no, did
no,
she write? I'm just wondering, you know, whether she had an attitude to writing an autobiography, you know, she just thought it would be pretentious or something like that.
I think she thought too many people did, yes.
Mm.
And it would be, I mean, in a sense, I suppose, there have been a certain number of autobiographies or biographies of that sort of period.
Mm.
But on the whole, I find them very interesting.
Yes, well, a marvellous one, Victorian period piece, isn't it?
Yes, it's about the house.
Gwen Raverat.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that, of course, is. But.
That's a bit earlier, of course.
Mrs. Stocks's, actually, I found a bit disappointing in a way.
Yes, I thought the first volume was good. I thought the second
yes,
volume wasn't so
but
good.
But, you know, yes, it wasn't as. Well, some of it was very good. But,
mm.
Marjorie Fry was a great friend of hers.
Was she?
That, yes, but she was very great on this, I say, but the magistrates and penal reform and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the Tawneys were great friends.
Were they?
You
see, and all this tells one where to look, you know, for references and so on to her. You say she wasn't good domestically simply because she was used to having servants. How did you notice that then? I mean, what couldn't she do for herself, sort of thing?
Well, she always had this faithful in when. Say it wasn't the same husky all time when I remember it was Mrs. Jones who did the cooking. And I don't think she ever tried really to, because this was, you know, Mrs. Jones, that was her role, and this was Dorothea's.
She wasn't interested in cooking anyway. I mean,
no.
She didn't eat
they were interested, and Uncle Harris took an interest in this reorganisation of the kitchen to make it. Actually, it was a very pleasant kitchen. It looked out on this. It's one of these houses with a long back garden, you know, and Uncle Harris was very keen on the garden. And so the kitchen was a very nice room looking on the garden. And they, you know, they were interested in arranging that in a labour-saving way.
So that she could cook herself then, or so that the servants?
No, so that Mrs. Jones, so that it was a pleasant place for Mrs. Jones to sit and be, and, you know, it was her sitting room also in the kitchen.
Mm.
You know, but servants must be treated like properly.
And she got on with her servants.
Oh, no, Mrs. Jones was absolutely devoted to her, yes.
She's no longer alive, I suppose, Mrs. Jones.
No. Oh, yeah. Aunt Dorothea was a great swimmer. She went swimming in a can again, almost up till the end. And Mrs. Jones was rather large and rather fat, and Mrs. Jones also went swimming, and she tried to dive, and there was a great occasion when she went in completely flat, and all the undergraduates on the bridge hailing her. But she used to go to the warm baths after when they were. Oh, she was great, you know, great supporter of swimming baths in Cambridge, so as well as the river, there was the other swimming baths for everybody, and she was a great supporter of this, and she used to go on going. Oh, as I say, quite up till, you know, putting our thought.
That's incredible.
Went on with the bicycle and the baths, you know. She smoked quite a bit. I always remember sort of after the bath, then she had her cup of coffee and her cigarette. It was all sort of. And she did it. She enjoyed that.
She went swimming for, just because she liked
because
swimming.
Because she enjoyed it, yes. Yeah. Not, I think, because she thought it was good for her health or anything like that. Because she enjoyed it.
Yeah, she sounds an incredibly energetic sort of person. I mean.
Yes, she was.
I wondered how she did. I suppose she didn't have the sort of family claims which would drain a lot of
I think, I mean, this certainly one, these days, everybody does spend a certain amount of time being domestic, although, of course, there's always labour-saving things, but...
Yes.
I think Mrs. Jones probably did the shopping, too. I mean, I mean, she would take an interest in what they were going to eat, and if somebody was coming, no doubt, but... I don't think she spent much time on it. But she certainly had definite standards about entertaining, you know, that you did make people comfortable.
And she was quite good at sort of talking to people. Was she good at small talk and things like that? Or maybe she didn't move the circle.
She'd certainly keep it going, oh yes. I mean, I think because she was interested in whoever you were, you know, I think this was the secret of it. No, I think she'd have lost patience with, as I said, I don't know what Cambridge ladies probably thought she was absolutely frightful. I mean, she wasn't the normal Don's wife of the, you know, early days.
Was she forthright, would you say?
Oh, yes, definitely, yes.
And sort of impatient with pretentiousness or social airs, that sort of thing?
Yes, I don't know how much, I mean, she used to criticise people when I was talking about people, but how much she did it to them when they were there, I wouldn't really, well, really.
But she wanted to remain active all her life anyway, she didn't want to lie down and give up.
Oh, no. As I say, this was what, when she had to do less and less, she found so frustrating, but she certainly went on with this reading.
What did she actually die of? Was it just really old age? I mean, did she... You said she was ill and then she came out of being ill again, and then...
It was awful. I think it was something probably bronchial, really.
Was it? I see. Not that it matters terribly. I just wondered whether... You know, she had a problem with any particular...
I know she was terrified. What I thought was so awful, and I thought was sort of the fault of Miss Red Cross, how many couldn't help it. But she'd sort of go on getting up because she didn't want to go into even nursing home. For one thing, it was a frightful waste of money. You know, it's terribly expensive, and that wasn't the way to spend your money. And the other thing was that it was the last thing you wanted to be in a nursing home. And what was rather nice was, actually, they took her back at Langdon House, which was the place she'd helped to found, where they had a nursing wing, and that was where she did, in fact, die, not in the nursing home. And they were very fond of her there, so that was very nice. But there's this awful feeling. I think she did get very bad colds, and she used to say, oh, you can't do anything for a cold. It takes 3 days. One to come, one to have, one to go away, or something like this. Well, that's all right, you know, when you're young and healthy, but it's not so good when you get on, and I think this was the sort
she
of
she didn't
thing.
Sort of look after herself, perhaps, as she should have done, you know, in later life.
Well, she went on doing things which probably... I mean, people in Cambridge were pretty good, obviously, about giving her lifts to various meetings and so on, if she was going to.
She'd probably think life wouldn't have been worth living if
no,
she had taken
I think
care
no,
of her.
Quite.
You said she stood for Parliament. Do you remember that time, or was it really before you knew her? I wondered really whether she... You say she really did want to get into Parliament.
Oh, she did want to, very much, yes. I think she would have been very good.
Do you?
Because she got such a clear... And she was a good speaker. Yes, I think having... and Susan Lawrence, who, as I say, was a great friend, of course, she was in. And she worked, as I say, she worked for so many other elections. I mean, there wasn't a by-election in Cambridge when she wasn't out knocking at doors. Do you know what I mean? She really did do the slogging. And went on going to these awful meetings.
Yes.
She never left out, never said, oh, well, I think I've done my bit. we wished she would, you know what I mean? Actually, she said she first canvassed at 10, she went round with her mother for the Liberal Party, and she carried the literature, and her mother did the spouting. one of her really most satisfying jobs, one of the most important in many ways, because it was a period when a lot was happening in education.
I ought to look up the local newspapers, really, for a bit.
I think it's a pity you're in Oxford, not Cambridge. I mean, Cambridge was her base, and there must be a lot of people in Cambridge still who, and there must be a lot of them. One thing was that there was some friend of hers who wanted to do a bust of her, and in order to help the friend, she agreed to this, and she couldn't stand it when it was finished. She said, I couldn't possibly have that. Look at that every day, could I? So she came and parked it on us. And it was very good, but it was rather severe, because I remember it was lent back for some exhibitionist before we had it, and Henry Morris went in and that's Clara Rackham. But anyway, I was always all terrified of it because it was terribly heavy, and I thought I had visions of it falling on some small child. Anyway, after I died, I managed give it back to the Guildhall, so I imagine if you go to the Guildhall, you'll probably find it on steps or something.
Yes. What about the influences on her? I mean, was her mother an important influence on her, do you think? It's rather difficult for you to know about that, is it? Were the people who undoubtedly...
I think her elder sister, Margaret, who was also a very interesting person, she was more literary. She wrote Pioneer Women and British Museum and art. She was very keen on art. She went to Newnham ahead of Andorfer, and she had a good many friends, and I think they probably all had an influence. No, it's rather curious. I mean, I wouldn't have thought to either of their parents. There they were.
Because what you said about her mother, and obviously one would imagine that maybe she modelled herself on her mother or something like that if she went round with her.
Well, that's it's funny because, I mean, my recollections of my grandmother was that she was an old lady with a cap, you remember, when she was probably only in her 60s. And my grandfather certainly got very old, rather young, so to speak. The grandma was very kind. But she probably, I think she came from the north, actually. I think she was probably more of an influence, perhaps, and more than, when as a child one thinks of granny as granny doesn't want,
Yes.
But I really wouldn't. But I think Newnham, I think it was meeting all these, after all, anyone who went to Newnham in those days was probably...
You're in a circle.
A bit. I mean, it was quite unusual to go. And
yes, of course.
I think it was probably Newnham that had the...
Yes.
She went to St Andrews, because the family moved from London down to Essex, and so she went as a boarder to St Andrews, and she enjoyed that tremendously.
You mean a school?
School.
Yes.
St Leonard's, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's
she
right.
Went
I've
there.
Got that detail in my...
And she enjoyed that. That was the best time in her life at that stage. And I think she was extremely sociable. She liked meeting people and being with people. And then I think it was all the various friends she met in, the different ones we've mentioned, probably a lot in the suffrage movement, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, it all fits into that circle.
And then the Labour movement.
As you know from Mrs. William Talbot's book, it was terribly important in the whole women's movement, really.
Yes.
NU really grows out of Newnham to some extent, I think. I met Kathleen Courtney, actually, just before she died. She also came, I think, from Newnham.
I think my friend there in Hamilton, she knew Kathleen Courtney, had a great admiration for her.
Did she? Mm.
And, there were a number of women, weren't there?
Yes, well, Kathleen Courtney was a bit of, well, I imagine the same, maybe the same age, actually, as your aunt, in fact.
I think in the sort of peace and international side, she was Mrs. Corbett Ashby.
Oh, yes, well, of course, I met her more than once. She's a marvellous person. She's judging the party, its leadership, not moving fast enough, sort of thing.
No, I don't.
Because the CND movement is further left, isn't it, than Gate School wasn't that tired. I wondered whether...
Yes, Fight and Fight Again. There they are.
Mm.
Well, she was certainly always very strong on the pacifist. I mean, I think she would have been a conscientious objector if she'd been a man.
Mm.
And I think she had friends in, you know, that Fellowship of Reconciliation and all that kind of side. But I don't...
She was getting on, of course, by that time anyway, so I suppose...
I think possibly, as the last years, perhaps she concentrated a bit more on the sort of things which she felt she could still do, which were sort of local things and penal reform and so on, and possibly... Yes, I think she, and education. She was
sort of non-political things, or less political
on the educational the schools, colleges, and women taking a full part in. It's awful. One, I realise that after one didn't get all the things that one should have done.
Oh well, I mean, that would be a much more important thing. That is looking after her, or giving her something to think about, or going to see her. And that's a thing. That's the important thing, isn't it, really? And anyway, she probably wouldn't have, as you say, wanted to talk about the past particularly. Anyway, would she? Because she was living for, you know, today and tomorrow, really.
She was a family person. I mean, she was. My Uncle Willie was the youngest of, but my Uncle Willie was the next one, and he lived in Letchworth, and she used to come over really when she wasn't fit to, he wasn't at all well. She used to come over to see him. I remember very much that.
Mm. Is there I don't know about the Tabor family. I mean, is it a well-known family, or, you know, family which she was very loyal to as a family? I don't know what it does. It's an unusual name. I wonder...
It farmed.
They farmed.
Farmed in Essex.
Mm. Yes.
I
wonder whether it was sort of involved in the intellectual aristocracy or anything like that.
No, it wasn't intellectual aristocracy. It was family sort of middle class. One brother became an engineer, my father went into the Indian Civil Service, the other brother went as a solicitor. I mean, that was the sort of pattern, you know.
Mm. Do you want to answer your phone?
Well, I think Marion's there now. She's probably making a cup of tea, and I think we might look at some photos soon.
Sure, it's awfully kind of you, yes. Tell me what Lewis said to you again, would you, James Sybil?
Well, when I first went to Manchester to join the repertory company there,